This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
Good morning. I'm Ann Holliday along with Bob Harris. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Ann.
And as you heard, you can give us a call at 368-9372, 368-WESB. Bob loves to answer your questions, so feel free to give him a call. Or you can send us an email at garden@wesb.com. Or you can go to Facebook. There's a pinned post there where you can ask your questions there. But either way you go, there are three very good ways you can ask Bob questions and about anything in your lawn and garden, and he'll probably have the answer.
Hopefully, yeah.
But you were going to talk about something that's like really sweeping the nation in the plant world.
Yep. So, but I got to do one of them. But first.
Okay. But first.
Stephanie sent an email, and she's from Carbondale, Illinois. And, we get listeners from other places besides Bradford. So she's looking for lemongrass, and I'm going to tell Stephanie first, hello, and thanks for listening, Stephanie. But go to your local florist and see if they'll order you one in. They should be able to.
Okay.
Neat plant to have.
And thanks, Stephanie, for listening.
You bet. One of the plants that's taken the nation by storm is succulents. You see them used in a lot of different ways. People doing picture frames or topiaries or just dishes. Because they're a nice, easy plant. They're probably one of the best plants for a beginner even, or someone that's been gardening for a long time, because they come in so many different interesting shapes. So we did a little class at Graham's Greenhouse, and we got about 50 people. So it was a good show-ups. So what did I tell them about the succulents? Succulents are a whole lot like cactus. They come from the desert, but not the desert of the United States. The deserts of the United States are cactus and South America. And they're the only place cactus grow in the whole world. Now, there's been some cactus taken over to other deserts like in Africa that grow there now, but originally cactus began in America only. And that's just a fascinating fact. But a lot of succulents, their home where they came from is South Africa, the deserts of South Africa. And since they're desert plants, you should treat them as desert plants. So I tell the people before we started planting that, you know, watering is going to be critical. These plants aren't like your petunias and marigolds, or your trees and shrubs and lawn. They don't need a whole lot of water. They're kind of like camels. When water occurs, they drink a whole lot, more than they should, and their leaves really swell up, and they store it because they don't know when the next rain will come. It may even be a whole year, so they can store for a long, long time. So your watering has to be careful. You know, a lot of people like to get on the schedule of I'll water my plants once a week. Don't do that with succulents and cactuses. I even tell the people in the class that after you've gotten it home and you've watered it first and then you're watching it, if you think it's dry, walk away from it for another week before you water, because they really don't like to be in a wet spot at all. So watering is real critical, and it can make it real easy too, because you can forget the water for a month or two even, maybe even longer. I have a buddy that has a cactus at home. They probably only waters once or twice a year, and it stays real healthy and grows. It's pretty neat. So keep that in mind.
I actually sent you a question about my succulents and cactuses. I was looking this up right now on our email. I asked you the question May 17th. And I haven't watered since then, and they all look beautiful.
Yeah. Okay. So. Yeah. You know, I tell you, you know, if you think they need water, and walk away from them for another week. One way to really tell, and you know, this takes a little practice. If they do need watering, the leaves on the succulents will get a little wrinkly. So when they start to get a little wrinkly, that means they're getting dehydrated. So that's a good sign that they may need some water, but not much, you know, just a little bit of water. So that's one way. Otherwise, you know, if they're not looking wrinkly and they're still looking good, then leave them alone, because water can damage them more than help of them. So I talked about that, and then I talked about the light. I know they come from the desert, so people think I got to put them in a sunny window. And that's good, you can. But you don't need a sunny window. You can have them in an office underneath your light in the office, and that can be enough for them. So they can grow just about anywhere in their house, you know, where there's nice bright light, and it doesn't have to be sunlight. Another neat thing about them is they're really not bothered by bugs and diseases. There's just none out there that really bothers them, so it makes it easy to care for them there. And one other thing to keep in mind, I tell people too, with the succulents, is they do most of their growing in the fall and winter. So be real careful through the spring and summer of not watering them too much, but you may have to change your watering habit come fall and winter, because they will put on a growth spurt, so they may need a little bit more water. But, you know, I emphasize that little bit more.
Okay.
We don't want them to grow too much. Some of the signs that you'll get if you're overwatering, they'll start to grow even when they're not supposed to. And they'll even grow real tall, even though they're supposed to be a real ground-hugging thing. They can grow real tall if they're getting too much water or if they're not getting quite enough light. So that's a good sign for you that if they got lots of light but they're starting to get tall, then you've probably overwatered them.
If you have a question for Bob about succulents, cactus, or anything in your home or garden, plant-wise, give us a call at 368-9372, 368-WESB, or you can send us an email at garden@WESB.com, or go to Facebook and you can ask your question there. Take her away, Bob.
Okay, one more thing about succulents to help people with the watering and so on. I like to plant them in the saucer that goes underneath the pot. It's very, very shallow, may only be an inch or 2 inches deep. And the reason for that is because you can't put much soil in there.
Oh,
so
okay.
The more soil you put in with a succulent, of course, the more water it can hold and the more damage that can occur. So a saucer makes a great planter for the succulents. And because there's no drainage holes in it, you know, you can put it right on your desktop so that when you do water, the water's not going to spill onto your desktop or tabletop or wherever you have it.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So, again, that's emphasizing very little water, so very little soil even for them. So that kind of covers succulents. And I want to thank all the people for showing up to that class there.
So
great group.
I was going to say, when you had that class, they got to build their own succulent gardens,
yeah.
Right? I bet you had 50 different looking ones.
We did, yeah. And I guess I gave them a little hint there. What I always like to do is I like to put some kind of symbolism or meaning into the planting. So I kind of showed them what I would do in the saucer. I would have like three succulents, one representing me and my daughter and my wife. And then me and my wife and daughter had a great hike out in the desert of Arizona one year. And there was a big mountain in the background, and we followed the trail. We didn't make it all the way to the top, but we made it part way up. So I always like to put a big rock there, and that symbolizes that mountain we were walking towards. And then on top of the soil, I put a little bit of gravel like you get for your aquarium, signifying the little trail going through all the cactuses. And there it was, the saguaro cactus that we walked through. We walked through the saguaro forest there. Was pretty neat, but there's a lot of other cactuses that grow there. And of course, I always like to throw in one more rock in there, and that will symbolize my dog Corky, the wonder dog, because he was the greatest dog on earth. He knew every trick in the book and could do them all. by voice command or hand command, or just like to sit there and do them all for you all the time, every trick. And he even could bend a spoon with his mind. So he was a pretty special dog.
I bet Corky and my dog, BB, are up in heaven playing together. They're probably watching us right now. And we're going to take a break right now and hear from our friends from Worth W. Smith. But just a reminder that if you have a question for Bob, you can give us a call at 368-9372, 368-WESB. Or you can send us an email at garden@WESB.com. Or you can go to Facebook and ask your question there. And we will be right back. Well, that was a very short break, but we want to thank our friends from Worth W. Smith for sponsoring our show every week. So we were talking, you were talking about symbolism,
yeah,
Bob, and I ever since the first time, I think it was with a one of the classes you did at the Creative Women's Workshop, you were talking about symbolism. Oh, I know. It was the Zen garden.
Yeah.
I've been doing that every time I plant something now, because it just, it's so important to me now. Now that, because whenever I look at my plants, it's it gives special meaning to it.
Yeah, brings back a nice memory then, huh?
It does.
And that's the key to only use only good memories when you do any symbolism in your planting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, yeah, you wouldn't want to, like, look at your plants and think of bad things.
Yeah.
So if you have a question for Bob, give us a call at 368-9372, 368-WESB. You can send us an email at garden@WESB.com, or you can go to Facebook and ask a question there. Lots of ways to get your question taken care of.
So this weekend may be pretty hot and sunny. So I want to, excuse me, I want to give a few hints here. Maybe it's time to not mow your lawn this weekend, because it can be damaged when you start to cut the leaf blade down a bit, and we get all this sun and heat. Your lawn can really suffer from it, and all these little stresses can add up, because we don't know what's going to come in the future. Maybe we'll hit a real dry spell, and you've already added one stress by cutting it during a hot, sunny weekend. You're going to stress it a little bit more. Your lawn, the growth is slowed up, so it can withstand letting it go a week. But also, think about if you were going to do some pruning on your shrubs and trees outside, maybe you should hold off on that too, because quite often I've seen we prune, and we know a lot of sun and heat's coming. Now we take off a lot of that outer leaf surface of a plant. So now we're exposing those inner leaves to a lot more sun than they're used to or prepared for. So then all of a sudden we get a lot of browning, and maybe even some of those leaves will just brown right up and dry and fall off. So maybe even hold off on the pruning this weekend. So hold off on the mowing, hold off on the pruning, if you're going to do any spraying, don't do it.
You have a lot of guys out there right now saying, honey, Bob said,
yeah,
don't mow the lawn this weekend.
when you're spraying for weeds, whether they be in your patio, you know, you're using Roundup, or in your lawn where you're using Weed Be Gone, I wouldn't do that either, because when temperatures get above 80, that spray can become a volatile gas, we call it. So some will get on the plant and do its job, but the rest of it forms a gas that can float around, and it won't turn back into a liquid till it touches some leaf surface that's a little bit cooler, and then do damage to a plant far from where you sprayed even. So it's very, very risky spraying Roundup or Weed Be Gone or any of those chemicals during a time when it's over 80. So that's just another warning.
Okay.
And another thing we're seeing a lot of this year, because it's been quite warm and humid, that we're seeing a lot of powdery mildew on plants. Most of the time, the plants will outgrow it. They'll survive. It's just one of the things they're used to over millions of years that Mother Nature does once in a while. But it could also be sending you a signal that you don't have enough air circulation in that area, or maybe you've been fertilizing that plant quite a bit, so it's created a lot of leaf surface, so air can't get through the plant. So those are a few things to think about, too. If you feel that you're getting a little powdery mildew on, maybe you should thin the plant out a little bit so it can get better air circulation. Or you can mix up some baking soda and water, spray that on. That can help stop the spread of the powdery mildew. Or you can use some hydrogen peroxide in a sprayer with mixed with water and spray that on the surface. That gives it a good blast of oxygen and brings a lot of health to those leaves so they can fight off that fungus.
Okay.
All right. A couple little hints there.
Okay. And if you have a question for Bob about anything he's talked about today or anything else that's on your mind, lawn and garden-wise, you can give us a call at 368-9372, 368-WESB, or send us an email at garden@wesb.com, or go to Facebook and ask your question there.
Okay.
Oh, wait, Facebook.com/107. Wait, Facebook.com/WESB1075. Okay. I should probably give the address that I'm telling people to go to Facebook.
So one of the more popular plants in the landscape is the reblooming daylily. They're kind of the dwarf daylilies, not the ones that get real tall, you know, shoulder high. I'm talking about the smaller ones that only about knee high, and they're all blooming right now, and of course this can go for a lot of your daylilies too. So when they're done blooming, it's a real good idea to that blooming stalk go all the way back as close to the ground as you can and cut that stalk off. Otherwise, what's happening is it's gonna take energy from the plant after it's done blooming. Now it's gonna try to make seed. And the seed, most of the time, is no good anyhow. They've been hybridized so much that they'll make seed, but it's sterile, and it won't become a plant. Or if it was sterile, it'll be many, many years before you'll see a real plant. So get rid of that stalk. And in doing that, by deadheading your daylilies, you'll get another flush of blooms later in the fall. So that's why they call them reblooming daylilies. Now, those real tall ones that get chest high or head high, they're not going to do that, but it still benefits them by deadheading them. So that energy isn't going trying to make seed. It's going to produce more plant. And, of course, more plant means more blooms next year. So you're going to benefit the daylily no matter whether it's a dwarf rebloomer or the old-fashioned type of daylily.
Reblooming is good. I like plants that rebloom. And if you have a question for Bob, give us a call at 368-9372, 368-WESB, and you know the other ways.
And speaking of deadheading too, one of the other most popular plants in the landscape is the hosta. That's always been a fun plant for me. It's not always been called the hosta. I got to give you a little history here if I got time here.
Oh, you do?
Okay.
I know this story, but I like it.
It was one of the first perennials brought and planted into a garden in America. And it was done in Salem, Massachusetts, where you can still see that original plant. And back then it was called Funkia. It was brought over from the Orient and planted there and became very popular because it does grow well in the shade. Some of them grow well in the sun, and it puts forth a lot of blossoms. But botanists didn't like that name, Funkia, even though my grandmother still called it Funkia right up as long as I can remember. So they changed the name. They thought it was in the lily family, so they called it the plantain lily. And then, of course, as botanists learned more, they finally decided, no, it's not in the lily family either. It's its own family. It's not related to any other plant. So that's how it got the name hosta. And that's the one we're going to stick with today.
A lot of people still call it hosta lily. I was one of those people until about 5 years ago.
And that's okay. You know what? That's okay. Even if you want to call it a funkia still, I think that's okay too. So that one also benefits from those flower stalks. Once they're all done blooming, the hummingbirds have gotten everything they want out of it. It's a good idea to go way back in that down to the ground with that stem and cut it off so that plant can use that energy for next year.
Okay.
But, you know, if you want to, you know, sometimes it does occur that you can leave a flower stalk or so and let it go to seed, because many of them will have good seed. We call it viable seed that will drop to the ground, or you can collect them and let them go through a real cold period, either outside, got to go through a winter, or for several weeks in the back of your refrigerator. And then you can plant them, and possibly you'll come up with a brand new hosta, because it probably got mixed with the pollen from another hosta, and maybe you'll come up with a new variety, although there already is 6,000 varieties on the market right now.
Oh, wow.
So it's going to be pretty hard to come up with, but you never know.
I mean, they come up with new apples every year.
That's true, yeah, and there's thousands of those already.
So am I imagining that there's now a mini hosta, or is there a mini
hosta? Yes, there is, a very, very mini. And I'm proud to say I got one at home.
Oh.
It doesn't grow more than 3 inches tall, 3 or 4 inches tall. The leaves are very small, about the size of your baby finger. But it still flowers just like any other hosta. Of course, the flowers are only about 4 or 5 inches off the ground. It's kind of neat. So hostas grow in any size, from those real miniature ones right on up to great big ones that'll grow 3, 4, 5 foot across with leaves that big. bigger than a basketball, the leaves. And, of course, big flowers, too. And another interesting thing, too, not all hostas, because I know some people are bothered by it. Their flower stalks get real tall. Some people are bothered by that. And me, to a point. A lot of hostas their flower stalks don't get tall. They just get just barely above the foliage before they bloom. So if you're really bugged by those real tall stalks that are 3 foot tall, then search for those hostas that where their flower stalks only get just above the foliage, and then you'll be happier there too.
See, I like the real tall ones. That's what my grandmother and my mom used to have at their houses, and I really like it that way. But I would like to have a little one, because that was one of my favorite plants at my mom's house.
Oh, okay.
Hosta. So I think I'm going to get myself a little one.
Yeah, there's every size you can imagine that they'll grow to, from just that little 6-inch wide plant that's only 2 or 3 inches tall to the, you know, next step. They're only a foot by a foot, or a foot and a half by a foot and a half, right on up to them, you know, 4 foot by 4 foot, big guys.
So they're just such a neat plant.
And
I
one of the
them.
Easiest plants in the garden to grow.
Oh, gosh, you don't have to do anything to it, really.
You don't, really.
And so if you have a question for Bob, there's still time. You can give us a call at 368-9372, 368-WESB. You can send us an email at garden@WESB.com, or you can go to facebook.com/WESB1075 and ask a question there. So, Bob, back to you.
Oh, okay. I got to come up with a little more.
Well, let's talk about the Creative Women's Workshop coming up next week.
We better, yeah.
You are teaching a class on mushroom logs.
Me
you and somebody else.
Richard Putnam, yep. Richard Putnam is the leader of the Master Gardener group there in Smithport, and the group keeps growing and growing. I'll just be helping him. He'll be doing a class on a mushroom log where we're going to help all the ladies inoculate their log and prepare it to take home, and they can grow their own edible mushrooms, only edible mushrooms.
And it's fun. I did one at the Garden Symposium back in March, and it's a fun thing to do. So if you haven't signed up for the Creative Women's Workshop yet, you can go to bradfordlandmark.org or their Bradford Landmark Society's Facebook page, and or contact them some other way and sign up for 4 classes. You get to take 4 classes, which is really cool.
And they're all pretty great, yeah.
The one that Bob wishes he could take, but I am taking, is pounding plants.
Yeah, boy, I'd love to do that.
Judy Yorks teaches that class, and it is the neatest thing. You get different plants that are on the Crook Farm property, and you pound them, literally pound them with a hammer into a design. And the, I don't know what the color is called in the plants, but the color comes
pigments.
Out. The pigments.
Yeah.
Come out on this piece of muslin, and it's just beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
It's you can't describe it. It's just beautiful.
And you know what surprises me is a lot of the ladies doing it, and they're all laughing and having a good time when they're doing it. You know, I'm jealous. They're creating art.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? They are. I don't know if they all know that or not, but they are creating art. They're just not using a paintbrush or a pencil or chalk or charcoal, but they're creating art with a live plant.
Yeah. It's just, it's so beautiful. And that's a good thing about art that you talked about. You don't need to be like a painter or a sketch artist or whatever to create art. You can create art anywhere and anyhow. If you say it's art, it's art.
That's right. There's a lot of different forms. Yep.
And so, and gardening is art too.
That's right. It is. It is. Yeah.
And especially the way you did it at Pitt Bradford. Holy moly. The way you had the theme and the color schemes and everything. That was just awesome. But also, back to the Creative Women's Workshop.
Yeah.
Bill Graham is teaching a class.
Yeah.
On making wine.
Now, Bill's been doing this for a long, long time. So he does know the best way to do it right here in Bradford.
And
you know,
that's a really good thing because you can buy all the books you want from like all over the country, but Bill's done it in Bradford, so he's going to tell you what works and what doesn't work. And I will be able to do that too since I am
all right.
taking that class. And then there's Sally Kostick is teaching a class on drawing. Her sister is teaching a class on making a rustic Christmas decoration. There's a class on folding napkins. There's knitting. There's Pisanki, the beautiful decorated eggs.
Yeah.
All kinds of classes. So go to bradfordlandmark.org and register for the Creative Women's Workshop. You get four classes. You get to take stuff home.
Yep. And learn a new skill.
Exactly.
Yeah. And don't forget, there's the forge there, too.
Oh, yeah, blacksmithing.
Blacksmithing, yeah.
And this year, you're going to make a stick to use to roast your marshmallows your s'mores.
Yep.
So that'll be fun. And so if during the week, if you have a question for Bob and you don't think it can wait till the next Saturday, you can send me an email at garden@wesb.com, and I will pass it on to Bob.
Even if you're from Carbondale, Illinois.
That's right. So thanks again to Worth W. Smith.
Tune in next Saturday for more tips from Master Gardener Bob Harris on 1490 WESB Bradford.
CM Bradford.
We serve Bradford.
B107.5
WESB Bradford. This is W